Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Welcome to episode 81 of Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of comicbook.com. I am your host, Kofi Outlaw, and with me is my co-host, Matthew Aguilar.
What's up, everybody?
And back on the couch with us is Mr. Connor Casey.
What's good, Kofi?
Also, in like a golem-like cave on the other side of the studio today, we also have with us Mr. J.K. Schmidt is back. You got to say something for the audio people.
Hi,
this is a
people.
Podcast.
Yeah, I forget. You got to hear me. Here. You don't see my disgusting visage.
We haven't
visage.
Gotten to the Invisible Man trailer yet. So,
it's cool.
Let's let them know you're actually here.
I exist.
When you said Invisible Man, I thought 98 degrees. Anyway.
Yes, that is crazy. Moving right along, agreed. We are going to be talking about a myriad of things today. We're going to be talking about some horror. We got a new exciting horror trailer that came out, the aforementioned Invisible Man, so we're going to be talking about that. And we have a lot of deep dives to do today. We have to review a movie, the new horror film, Dr. Sleep. We got to review not one, but two new X-Men spinoff comics. And Connor and Matt are going to take us through the now expanding world of wrestling with AEW's Full Gear event, which I have no idea what that is, but we are all going to learn about it together today.
You got that out so smooth, though. I'm so proud.
I know. I've been doing this.
You killed it. You killed it, though. You would not know.
81 episodes. Boom. So, you're just second nature. So, we're going to jump right into our new segment today, talking about the new horror trailer that dropped right before we got in here. And we've been excited for this movie. It is the remake of Universal Pictures' Invisible Man, the classic Universal monster movie from that line. But it was 2 years ago to the day that we were supposed to get Dark Universe, Universal's monster franchise that Tom Cruise killed with his stupid mummy movie.
Rest in peace.
R.I.P. Rest in peace, Dark Universe. But we finally... You know, they did, Blumhouse picked up The Invisible Man, which was originally supposed to star like Johnny Depp or something in the Dark Universe franchise. But now we got this, and you know what? I'm not mad Dark Universe is gone. I was really excited about the concept of superheroes and monsters mashing together. Yeah. But Blumhouse picked up The Invisible Man, did something different with it, and I'm really liking what I saw. I mean, we talked about this movie when we first heard it announced. Because which we almost never do for horror movies on the podcast.
No, because that synopsis they dropped.
Yeah, was so kind of intriguingly significant. This new Invisible Man stars, of course, Handmaid's Tale, Mad Men star, Elizabeth Moss. And it basically is kind of Invisible Man for the Me Too era. I mean, I tweeted that. I don't think that's wrong. I think that's a fair assessment to say about kind of, it's about a woman who has an abusive husband who basically escapes from him. Finds out that he's presumably killed himself and left her all the money as some kind of apology and atonement for how he was. But she has to kind of jumps through these hoops that include proving she's not mentally, you know, I forget the exact, I always forget.
Like she's got to essentially live in the house for a certain amount of days.
Yeah, and prove she's mentally stable and that like, you know, her accounting of things was true about their relationship. But of course, he's found a way to pay for some procedure to turn himself invisible. And he's basically stalking her in this house to try to drive her nuts to kind of prove her, like, you know, that she's insane and kind of clear up himself and his legacy and whatever. Which is kind of like a very strange but intriguing metaphor for gaslighting, right? So this all hinges, I mean, this is one of those things where, like, you obviously the social politics of it could overwhelm this film, but I think this movie looks like a great thriller, mostly carried by the fact that Elizabeth Moss is one hell of an actress. and this kind of descent into madness role that she's taking on looks to be very good, very interesting. And the entire concept of this kind of abusive husband dude kind of stalking around her and messing with her psychologically is in some ways like the most horrifying thing about it without, I mean, taking away the supernatural or science, I guess this is sci-fi in this case,
yeah,
element of it. Yeah, so this looks like a great horror remake and kind of good remake in general that you want to do in the sense of bringing something new to the property.
Well, I mean, I was going to like, I am bummed that the Dark Universe thing didn't.
Right.
Really?
I am. Cause I was, when that was announced, I was really excited. Like
Prodigium was going
to
do it for you.
I was excited. I wanted to see this connected universe of like all these icons and stuff. I wanted to see that. However, from what I understand, Blumhouse only has this, right? They don't have any of the other ones.
You say that. But no, there are going to be people that walk in, and no matter what you say until the end of the movie, they will not believe that this is not somehow connected to a bigger thing.
Well, until the movie comes out. It's kind of seeing this so far, just from the trailer. I would be very much game for them to just essentially take. Okay, well, we couldn't do this whole connected universe thing, but.
Russell Crowe walks out at the end and goes, "My name is Dr. G. I'd like to tell you about Prodigium." That's how we restart.
Just want to see them do these kind of unique takes on these characters. I would just like to see them get a stab and do something completely different like this with Frankenstein or with Dracula. Like, do all those characters with this kind of just think outside the box, completely different.
Do good reimaginings of all of
these things. I would have never thought to put like the Invisible Man is typically the main character and you're looking at things through their
his eyes. Yeah.
And this is just a really cool way to turn out its heads. Plus, we had talked about like Elizabeth Moss was going to be the person that carried this.
Yeah.
And just her reactions throughout this trailer, like as it keeps going and her disturbed, slightly tweaked, weird looks that she's giving is just like amazing. Like, I can't wait to see that. So
I love the pick for director Lee Whannell, guy coming off of Upgrade. It was behind the story for the first few Saw installments. Like,
Insidious actor, yeah.
The guy does a great job at just ramping up terror as a movie goes along and making the unlikely and the supernatural almost seem like it's, you know, plausible for a given story. Because with a lot of horror stuff, it's like, is he really invisible or is she just crazy?
Yeah.
He's like, no, we're not afraid to say, no, he really is invisible and just messing with her.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I can't wait.
I think it's going to draw a pretty big crowd. Female viewers seem to be responding to this and saying like, yeah, like this is in that it's creepy and it's kind of weird, but in a way that they want to go see, because I think I saw one female pundit tweet out, like, the title for this trailer is like, Elizabeth Moss can't figure out how to kill her abusive husband in parentheses yet. And I was like, that's awesome. Invisible Man's on my radar for February 2020. I'm going to be excited for that one. Stoked. Yeah, kind of stoked for that. Stoked, bro. All right, now, moving on. We got other remakes to talk about. We're going to touch on these real quick. We found out this week that we are getting two popular 90s properties are coming back. We are getting a new Scream movie. Don't ask me what it's about. We don't know anything about what it's about yet. We just know we're getting another Scream, and that could mean anything, really, because Scream is such a kind of winking, referential, at once commentary on horror movies and a horror movie. So I don't know what we're going to be doing at this level, at this stage. Scream 4 came out, and...
And there's a Scream series, right?
And a Scream series on TV also.
Okay.
Richard, over in the booth, Scream TV series.
Oh, look at that.
Thumbs down.
All right.
Richard from the booth says thumbs down on that Scream TV series.
We know he loves it.
I think what's
interesting about this, though, is that this is the first one that's not directed by, you know, rest in peace, Wes Craven. Horror legend.
Wouldn't it be cool if we directed it from beyond the grave?
From beyond the grave.
Some Ouija board type shit. Like, let's let him set the lens.
Maybe it's his hologram.
He'll rack the focus.
Maybe it was the Wes Craven hologram who did it. You never know.
You can't tell. They just cast James Dean.
Yeah, we're getting James Dean back. Wes Craven can be brought back.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think they have a script yet.
No.
Kevin Williamson, who executive produced the TV series, and he, you know, from Dawson's Creek fame, and he did all the first three Scream movies. I'm not sure if he did the fourth one, but I am I'm interested because that concept is amazing. I mean, it's no Final Destination as far as terrible horror films go.
I love Final Destination.
Yeah. Because Final Destination is just like the Rube Goldberg machine of how people die.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, I go in.
You know how like every horror movie,
I know what I'm
it's like
when I go to see
everyone's going to make an idiotic decision. I'm going to make a terrible decision. Yeah. There's a Geico commercial about people making bad decisions in horror movies, but then in Final Destination,
I love that
it's
with
just
the chainsaws
ramped up to a million. Yeah. Where everyone's just like, I'm going to stumble over my blood and fall on this glass shard and die. I don't know why we're talking about Final
Destination. Yeah, I don't know either. I just letting,
he got us on it.
I was letting the podcast get out of control just to see. I just assess everybody as we do these things. So. All right. But Scream. Bringing it back to Scream, yeah, we don't know anything. But, I mean, people are going to be interested because it is Scream. And hopefully they do some kind of, I mean, like long-awaited sequels have been hitting. We're going to talk about one today with Dr. Sleep. So it is possible to start these horror franchises over again. And we just talked about Invisible Man. Mm-hmm. So hopefully Scream does something equally as kind of clever. I mean, I'm trying to think about like what modern, I mean, horror is blockbuster now. I mean, that's the only thing I could think of is how big horror has gotten and kind of.
I mean, they could do kind of the deconstruction thing the Cabin in the Woods did, which took basically the, oh, let's examine the tropes of horror and rank that up to the nth degree. How you can do that with just some guy with a knife and a mask.
Well, yeah, right. Because I think since the years of Scream, when it was at its height, we've had a bunch of shows and other movies do what Scream did.
It'd be funny
better.
If, like, a lot
that's
of it
basically
is comedy.
What American Horror Story does.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, season. Every time.
It'd be
I
funny
mean,
if a lot of it's like, comedy, like, people seeing a Ghostface killer and being like, yeah, this isn't the 90s. I'm not scared of this.
Yeah, so then it's
that
a
would
scary
be great.
Movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, a Ghostface would then, you know, brutally kill them still, but, like, it would just
yeah,
be, like,
it's
that
a,
thing. Like,
it's a weird line they're going to have to walk.
Yeah,
but.
So I think they can do it. All right. Moving right along. The other thing we're getting back is the Flying V.
Yeah,
AKA
Mighty Ducks.
The Mighty Ducks reboot series coming to Disney Plus. There you
it's
go.
Not animated ducks fighting crime in space. I don't care.
I was so bummed, though, to be honest, when I read that it was it was the live action one.
I need Tim Curry as my villain.
I love that.
And I
that.
Need crime fighting ducks.
That animated series is so underrated.
Also here's what we hot. Know about the Mighty Ducks new series. The series awful. Focuses on a 13-year-old boy when he gets kicked off the junior division Mighty Ducks team. His mom decides to start their own team, finding players, a coach, and a place to play. Oh, mom's running the hockey team. Good for mom. Good for mom. But I don't know if I like that premise from a parenting perspective. You know, I don't think that's good. It's like, hey, I want to be athletically competitive. Oh, I didn't quite make the team. That's okay, honey. We'll start your own team. You don't ever need to meet those standards.
I mean, the Michael Jordan's playground taught us that sometimes there are some politics that go into this stuff. And you got to, you just got to keep on keeping on. You got to find your own way in this world, baby.
What okay.
If the, what wow. if the coach they find in the movie is Michael Jordan?
Teaching hockey.
There you go.
He don't
hockey.
Care about them kids.
He's just gambling on them.
If they're not buying Jordans, he doesn't care about them kids.
I mean, the premise is not, right off the bat, is not as interesting to me as the original premise of, hey, yeah. here's this hotshot lawyer who essentially has to slum it with these kids, right? And like, he's so used to high society and like being a hotshot lawyer, being rich and all this other stuff. And then he has to go do that. There's an automatic like relationship that he has with the kids right off the bat that makes it interesting. Yeah. This doesn't necessarily have that. Just
this
in
is
a
like my mom said, I'm cool. The movie,
but it could be, they could, I mean, they say they have
everyone
to find a coach
deserves
and other
a trophy.
Stuff.
Okay.
So it could no. end up having those contrasts. So we'll just have to wait and see. But from initial,
I mean,
I'm
let's
like,
be honest, we're
thrilled.
All happy just to hear Mighty Ducks.
Yeah.
And
I love it.
I mean, I hope they don't try to do cameos with the original cast because
I even
some
like
of
the
those
third
are,
one.
How is Estevez are, looking these days?
Some of those are
it's,
a real tragedy.
It's not
I don't
Estevez.
Think it's Estevez. Yeah,
it's
Estevez.
Goldberg.
I'm out there.
Oh god,
it's the kid who plays Goldberg. Who?
Hey, you know what?
I was Kenan's showing Kofi
well.
Yesterday. They have a they Kenan's post frequent mugshots on TMZ.
Oh,
where you're kind of like,
I really hope Kenan's
there. All right, we're having like four conversations right now, so let's pull it all back together. What's Mighty up? Ducks coming to Disney Plus, along with everything else. We're going to have a full Disney Plus breakdown for you because that thing is coming Ooh. Next week, and I'm not really prepared for all that, but it's going down anyway. So be on the lookout for the Mighty Ducks.
Going down.
All right, that'll do it for a new segment. Like I said, we got a lot to deep dive into today, some comic books, some horror movies, some wrestling. So be sure to stay tuned because when we get back, we're going to get into it all.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
All right, so in our first segment of our deep dive, I am going to, because I am the only one responsibly seeing movies for this podcast out here, Matt, I'm just kidding. You got a lot going on right now. You got a small amount of something going on with, being an impending daddy. So I go out here and bite these bullets for you. But I went out and saw Dr. Sleep this week, the Mike Flanagan, director of Oculus and The Haunting of Hill House, who is making a film based on Stephen King's sequel novel to The Shining, but also taking that novel and marrying it to Stanley Kubrick's version of The Shining to create this kind of hybrid sequel of both the book and the movie. That was a tall order to do. And this is not a short movie. It's a 2.5-hour movie. Starring Ewan McGregor as the grown-up version of Danny Torrance. And I am proud to say that Dr. Sleep is, at once, one of my favorite horror sequels of all time.
Wow.
One of the best Stephen King adaptations of all time. And if you just want to keep it on a smaller comparison scale, it's much better than It Chapter 2 was. Like, much better. Just an overall experience. I realize they're different stories, but, like, overall kind of cinematic experience. Dr. Sleep, Mike Flanagan does such a good job of first building and establishing these worlds and doing so not just through exposition, but actual, like, his movies and like or TV show has an identity to it, a signature. Dr. Sleep feels like Flanagan's film. He's really good at this dark, lavish kind of cinematography and look to his movies. But it also feels like it is a perfect companion piece to The Shining movie by Kubrick. I'm talking from just like how he uses old techniques like one shot fading into the next shot, like directly kind of that fade over motion that The Shining does a lot, to just the actors he cast to play the original characters from the original movie and how they capture the spirit of the original actors without having to do that de-aged crazy crap and all that. Like they just... It's old school. We just get actors who are good to mimic actors who were there before. And you get your Jack Nicholson, your Shelley Duvall, you know, your young Danny Torrance again. And it all, and the music by the Newton Brothers is fantastic. This is a fantastic soundtrack. I've disturbingly been listening to it since then. It's all like Shining music. So,
oh, Lord.
Yeah, if you're wondering why I've been hovering over your desk.
He gets an axe.
We gotta get you to see more comedies. Like that's gotta be.
They don't make those anymore.
Oh my god.
Maybe on Disney Plus when Noelle comes out. So this feels like you are back in the world of Kubrick's The Shining, years and years later when Danny Torrance is all grown up. But this movie feels like it literally could just be in a 2-disc set with Kubrick's and work perfectly. The villains are great. These kind of, I forget, they have this weird name, like Nagarth or something, but like Rebecca Ferguson from Mission Impossible is the main villain called Black Hat Rose or something like that is her name. And she's kind of, they're like a gypsy crew, but they're these kind of weird versions of vampires that basically eat Shining. So eat people's like psychic powers and stuff. And the scenes with them are great because they carry an entire thread of the story. And Rebecca Ferguson and the co-stars who play like her quote unquote family are all really good, interesting villain characters. Rebecca Ferguson is awesome in this. Yeah, she steals the screen. She's really great. And they do this thing where they're really intriguing and almost funny kind of humans until they're not. And when they're not, it is really terrifying and scary. And there are legit scenes in Dr. Sleep that are going to disturb some people really badly. And I wouldn't be surprised if some people like get up and walk out or just have like reactions, because there are some pretty intense scenes with these beings who primarily hunt children.
For the is that a like a visual thing? Like just the way
it's a visual conceptual thing. Like I said, these are vampires that essentially are hunting children.
Okay.
And this movie does not shy away from the end result of that
Gotcha.
Whatsoever.
Right. Man.
So like, yeah, pretty disturbing stuff. And it's overall just a good story to live in for 2.5 hours. Like when it ended, I was like, oh, I would have watched even more of this. Like,
that's a good
because
song.
It takes its time. I think Brandon Davis said in his review that we put on the site that it's kind of slow in the beginning, but it is. It's a movie that feels like somebody really did take a Stephen King novel and didn't do that thing where people just squeeze it like a juicer and just to make it more simplistic for a movie screen. It is still as complicated and kind of messy and a longer character story than you might be expecting from a film. But it's all wonderfully done and put together, so it's not at all bad to take that journey. And you will be kind of like on the edge of your seat or just tense and uncomfortable pretty much the entire time. Because there are some really, I mean, like I said, there's a lot of intense stuff. And not all of it has to do with supernatural horror. But the climax when we get back to the Overlook Hotel from the original Shining is pretty much spot on perfect recreation of Kubrick's film. That set, that's a big change from, you know, Stephen King's book. But this movie brings the two together perfectly in that climactic ending. And the new girl, I don't have her name right in front of me, but the new girl who is kind of the other primary character in it, who Danny Torrance kind of allies with, is really fantastic. Kaylee Curran is her name. She plays a character named Aberstone, who is this little girl who has probably the most powerful Shining we've seen yet in this world. And so Danny's trying to help her and protect her from these things that can basically, these vampires can track you as soon as they get a scent of you anywhere. And that's kind of the story. So I recommend, even if you haven't seen all the fanfare, you go out and check out Dr. Sleep, especially if you're a fan of Kubrick's The Shining like I am. Make sure you check that out. Personally, I'd give it about 4.5. I'm always kind of selective about 5 stars, but definitely like a 4.5-star review from me.
Does this make your top 10 for the year?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Dr. Sleep. And in terms of horror, it's my favorite of the year, awesome. I think.
That's
all right.
Awesome.
So that's it. Dr. Sleep.
I want to see that now.
Yeah, it's a good movie. You should. All right, moving right along. Let's talk X-Men. Okay, so we're in this Dawn of X relaunch. We've been doing everything every week, and this has been an interesting week, right? Like, because we got two things. I would call this the most mixed bag week we've had.
Yeah.
Not in terms of the books themselves. I'll get to that in a minute. But in terms of our reactions around the office, because we got the release of both X-Force number 1 and New Mutants number 1. Generally, I think the consensus was X-Force was awesome for most people, unless I'm missing something. I think I haven't heard from you, JK, but you liked X-Force?
I liked them both.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
So, like, yeah, I did too. So I liked both. I liked X-Force and New Mutants for two very different
movies. Oh, yeah, completely different.
Definitely. That we're about to get into. I think, Matt, you liked both.
Yeah, I loved both.
Started reading New Mutants. I've been caught up. I've been moving this past week.
No, that's all good.
Haven't had much time. Although I did have to read Spawn this week for the reviews. That was fun.
Oh, stop it.
Spawn.
Don't beat up old Toddy. But
I think Jamie was the
Jamie might have been the only. No, the I think critics. Jim soured Jim on. Too? I think okay. Jim soured on New Mutants too.
Jim's been mixed about pretty much most of the X-Men comics that have come out this year, though.
He loved X-Force.
He's been listening to Rob Liefeld a little too much, but we'll forgive him for that.
Stop it.
Draw Jim's, the feet.
He went home sick today. You can't sit in his seat while you're sick and then beat him up.
Boom, boom.
Down goes boom, boom. Down goes boom, boom. Fix boom, boom.
What? We got a camera. I'm not going to fix it now.
Hashtag fix boom, boom.
It's fine. She's asleep.
Oh, my gosh. Anyway. So, X-Force and New Mutants, like we said, two very different books. X-Force is probably the most direct continuation of the House of X kind of storylines in terms of showing you what this new world on Earth is like in light of the X-Men declaring their own nation, declaring mutant sovereignty and amnesty, and basically changing the whole geopolitical order of the world. And it opens with this kind of very dark, ominous thing about showing you there's always been these anti-mutant human supremacy groups. Now there's a new one. They all are kind of very Illuminati. They wear masks. They're sitting around a table doing this purity test to test everybody's blood. So make sure there are no mutant infiltrators, which of course there is one. It's Domino. Her luck kind of runs out.
That's an awesome sequence, I thought. I really like that sequence.
Oh, yeah, that was an awesome, the introduction. Yeah, the opening. And then we cut to, like, Krakoa. And this book kind of lays out a couple mysteries before it gets to the big event at the end. We are going to talk full spoilers for New Mutants and X-Force. So just so you're aware, full spoilers for New Mutants and X-Force. The climactic event is we get a return of the cybernetic, gang called the Reavers. Mm-hmm. This new iteration of it. Very kind of special ops commando type unit now. They use a commercial airliner, which I love this sequence too.
Yeah.
And they're in mid-flight. They put everybody to sleep and then do a halo drop from this thing.
Basically leave them for dead. You know?
Yeah. Well,
kill a bunch of humans.
Yeah. Well,
so we can kill
not
a couple
necessarily
of
like my dad's like an amateur pilot. Like a plane can fly really fly itself without a human for pretty much everything. Like you could just go to sleep and the plane will land itself automatically.
Well, that's comforting.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Yeah. A plane doesn't really necessarily
I mean, I know we don't need to divert, but like
no, that's a pilot's really just, interesting to me. When you're landing, it's mostly instruments. The pilot is just there to kind of tweak any changes that may need to be. And most times they're just there to make sure it guides down the way.
We are going to get right so much hate mail from the Air Force now.
My mind is blown right now.
Anyway, I'm talking about commercial airliners. The Air Force, you guys are all elites and we need you. I am not down with automated Air Force pilots. Let's just put that out there.
A lot of those Air Force pilots go on to be commercial airline pilots.
Hey, I was once a top-notch athlete, and then I went on and did other stuff, so I covered my part.
Very glad we got this clear.
Back to X-Force.
Yeah, I'm not defending commercial air pilots. No, definitely not for Delta. You can go
back to Final Destination.
You can take that somewhere else. anyway, so they do the Halo drop. They get into Krakoa, and they cause a mutant massacre, and they end up, the Reavers, taking out Xavier himself. But along the way, we get these other little mysteries. Like, there's a mystery set up with Beast and Wolverine that there's this... you know, feral animal mutant beastie thing that nearly takes out Beast that Logan's been tracking, and Beast wants to know how this is possible because Krakoa technically shouldn't have anything to threaten the mutant populace. And so that's opened up the door on what kind of theories as to why. I wrote an article about it, like either that, you know, either Krakoa isn't as reformed as we think because it used to be a place that trapped and fed on mutants.
Yeah.
So it was dangerous. Or I think it also could be there's some connection they're setting up to that Arako, the other half of Krakoa, that was sealed away in the demon realm. And maybe there's not the breach. There's a little crack in the breach because that would tie back into like Excalibur, that stuff.
That would be really cool, actually.
Or it's just Sinister messing around somewhere or somebody else messing with genetics and kind of messing with
or it's just the natural ecosystem of, you know, every place, right, is going to have...
Yeah, it's what Wolverine says.
Yeah.
Every place has to have predators. There is no paradise. And so there's that. There's also interesting things like Black Tom and his role in Krakoa, referring to himself as the third person and plugged into all the plants and kind of running the biological system of the island or the nervous system of
D-list
Krakoa.
D-list characters everywhere are just thanking Hickman.
Yeah.
Like... Forge.
Forge.
Black Tom, Cypher. Like, there are
Gold
so
balls,
many. Yeah, there's so many
now
characters.
Named Egg or whatever his
there's,
name is.
Yeah, Egg. There are so many characters that just, like, they have this renewed purpose. And, like, it's cool. It's cool to see what these
Well, that's what I like to say
do.
About this overall. I was going to get to is, like, you can carry this line on for at least 2 years just doing simple scenes of new context interactions between characters. Yeah. Like Black Tom, I could read like a whole issue of Black Tom following around Professor Xavier being like, listen to Black Tom. We need to get our defense up, homie. Like, this isn't right. The plants are telling me stuff. Like, that all is so interesting now. Like you said, with these played out, formerly kind of one-note D-list characters kind of coming back and having these interesting new roles.
It's not restrictive.
No.
Which for the first time in an X-Men comic, it's not been about... the limits and how you can meet, like, how do you fit your stories within those limits? Now these storytellers are able to add on to it, which is amazing.
And that was what Hickman said. He said, I mean, their rule in their room is you're not allowed to destroy. Like, basically you can only build and add. Like, you can't tear down things. You can't bring in a superpowered Omega level mutant to, you know,
kill everything off
and then start all over again. Like, you got to add to what's already there. So,
and that's what's like, been like those first six issues of House of X and Powers of X were so amazing in building this world where basically it's just like, hey, guess what? This is the new paradigm shift.
Yeah. And like
this
I said, we could do the first few years just exploring different corners of this new world to establish things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what we're doing now in a lot of ways. And it's very interesting to me. Which is my segue to say, I loved X-Force because it is directly connected, and there is this big action sequence at the end with the Reavers invading Krakoa, causing this massacre, shooting Xavier. I don't think I've ever been more turned on by Jean Grey than hearing her say, we need to be swift and violent right now.
That part was awesome. That part was so cool.
I was like, whew. It's like, slow down, X-Men. Like, yeah.
That was such a great part that typically would be reserved for Logan.
yeah.
or whatever. And it was awesome to see, like, oh, Jean Grey? Oh,
yeah, Jean Grey, Alien Tech, like, I'm going to F somebody up. Like, yeah,
that also, was just awesome. A special shout out to, like, whoever's idea was to bring Sage back into things. I loved that character for a minute during that time frame. So, yeah. That's
dude, cool. Extreme X-Men Sage was, like, my favorite. Yeah,
Extreme
you know,
X-Men.
You know Chris Claremont is, like, sitting in his cabin in the woods, like,
just hating.
I don't like what they're doing, but at least they're using stuff.
That's so true.
Yeah, that is true. But like, yeah, so X-Force had that excitement, but I also really like New Mutants. New Mutants is like the complete opposite end of the spectrum from X-Force in the sense that X-Force is very direct and can kind of pushing this storyline and world forward. And New Mutants is just totally off somewhere in space, like totally irreverent. It's like Community in space.
Yes.
Like, and very much. I am loving it because, again, I think the delight in this world is just being able to delight in this world.
Yeah.
Not have to do anything except a dinner scene, a party scene with these random assortment of characters that have really never been in a room or, like, had meaningful interaction, like the Star Jammers and the New Mutants.
Yeah.
Both hooked into, like, big space mythos and all that, but we've really never seen them together like this, and it is freaking hilarious to see. Corsair, I always want to call her Hezbollah or whatever her name
Hepzibah.
Is. Hepzibah. And
Hepzibah.
Close enough. What's the other one? Raza?
Chud.
And Raza and Chud, yeah. yeah and just like terrible. All of them having these kind of odd pair interactions with...
That's their names. Okay. Yeah, this is
I thought he was canon.
I thought he was just shouting out random.
He's for real. No, he's being for real names. Right now. He's not trolling. These are the Star Jammers' names.
Chud.
Yeah, and Hepzibah is her name.
You got it right.
I hope so.
Hepzibah.
Right. I've said it.
After he made such a big deal
like
about it.
She's weirdly had like some of the most standout moments in a couple books. Like X-Men 1, where she might have been trying to lure Rachel Summers into a threesome. Right.
And then her boyfriend's granddaughter.
Yeah.
She's like, hey, I like you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then this one.
Is getting a little too weird.
And she's just great in this one, too. Like, just, oh, man, just everything from them just having. And this book is literally just them having to travel to Shi'ar space and for the whatever amount of time that takes them on a spaceship to get there.
Yeah, like the only fight scene happens.
It's a road trip issue, like, basically.
It's like the last three pages is really the fight part, right? And everything else about it is just so, there's so many charming little moments.
Yeah, it's like vacation in space.
Yeah, like, and they're finding ways to use mutants. Again, it goes back to this. Like, we see Mondo. There's this whole great scene between Cypher and Mondo and Krakoa. And that whole thing of, like, this is so disturbing. Like, even Krakoa is weirded out by what it's having to do.
Oh, when Krakoa possesses Mondo. Yeah, but
see, that's the cool thing is, like, it's additive. Is like, you have these redundant mutant powers, and it's on these writers to basically figure out how they're going to contribute to the overall canon.
Yeah.
And they add, like, Mondo has a power that's basically a lot like Black Tom Cassidy's.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just on them to figure out, like, how they're going to tell the story.
Because you saw that part, right?
Yeah.
Which is like, that's cool X-Men
stomach.
And it's also, and I like how they're sneaking in like the threads of what are going to be larger stories to come. Like, because that was a big mystery that we've never even talked about in Powers of X. Like, who is that future X-Men Krakoa Cypher hybrid who becomes like a walking, talking humanoid and is then merged together? I mean, this Mondo thing is the first clue that we have that this is even possible. And it's kind of ironic humor because Cypher's the one that's like, man, that is so disturbing. And we know that in that future, like that becomes him, like, and he has to do that. And we haven't even touched on him touching Krakoa and the techno virus thing leaking into leaves. Like, there's so much going on with that I love, like I said, these threads.
And then coffee.
Oh, yeah. And there's a scene of them all drinking coffee and Jono being like, I can't drink it, but I love to smell it because he has a hole in his face. And you're like, oh, man. And there's some great comedy in New Mutants that I think is just not being appreciated. That book is full of, like, I laughed out loud so many times during that book, more than I've laughed at a comic in a long time, I think. Just like, you and I talked about Sunspot, who I love how they nail Sunspot as this kind of playboy douche character who's like trying to be a hero at that very end
moment. Yeah.
He's like, all right, up to me. He drowns like a whole bottle of whiskey. And he's like, all right, I feel like this is my time to save the day. And then it just cuts to the next scene where they're all surrounded and getting arrested by the PR. And he's like, ah, damn it.
And it was something we talked about in the office as far as the Star Jammers go, that like, it was a little bit interesting to see like Hickman's take on Corsair in X-Men And then because it's a little bit more like familial, he's, you know, he's,
yeah, he's with
more
his family.
Like a dad. Yeah. And then here he's just like
an unabashed pirate. Yeah.
I don't care about you guys. I mean, sorry. But then my favorite moment is when they all go through the thing of like, they're all talking to Sunspot, and Sunspot's like, you know, well, I mean, have we done anything wrong? And they all go through like, well,
yeah, there's like a panel of each of them saying something.
You killed my plants. You cut off my arm. You drank, you stole my whiskey. He's like, yeah. I won your whiskey. He's like, and
Hepzibah's just like, I do not like children.
That's so many great moments.
Yeah.
Rod Reese, just like, that he's the MVP of the issue by far, Rod Reese. That art is just.
Am I the only one? I must be the only one that just doesn't love. It's fine. I like the visuals. I just don't love them.
I mean, love the watercolor style. They're a little scratchy.
Yeah, they're kind of sketchy.
They look like they're real pretty, like a silver or something, but up close, they're more like a U, like a Leno Francis U.
That Ron scene, though, amazing.
I really enjoyed how awesome the character moments were in New Mutants. I just felt the plot was clunky. So that's why I'm kind of interested in seeing how
this, to be fair, there isn't really, I mean, that is the criticism that's fair. There isn't really a plot to this book quite yet.
At some point. Yeah. We
want to see Cannonball.
Basically like a throwaway line of dialogue. Like, let's go get Cannonball back. And then
I did have to flip back and be like, wait, why are they there in the first place? And then be like, oh yeah.
That was the clunkiest part of the issue.
Yeah. And then
I thought was great. And then as opposed to X-Force, like I thought X-Force had lacking in character moments, but just like was a very tight comic book. I just thought both of them kind of could learn from each other. But the thing is like the X-Men line has not gotten this much attention and love since now, you know, for like the last time in 2 decades, this is the most attention and as far as like editorial control and input and like the artists and writers that are put on it and the cohesiveness of the line, like this is the best it's going to get for the foreseeable future.
So just try to enjoy it.
I enjoy it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So
exactly.
I enjoy both. I think if you're looking for a more serious continuation of House of X, be sure to grab that X-Force 1. If you just want to have some more fun with like the X-Men characters and moments, be sure to grab New Mutants. We'll be back to kind of conclude the Dawn of X relaunch next week with Fallen Angels, which is the big asterisk one I think a lot of us are really curious about to see how that plays. And then maybe we'll stop talking X-Men as much.
And then X-Men 2 comes out next week.
Oh,
right?
God. I guess we never stop.
Yeah, it never
stops.
And then there's Wave 2, because that'll come with a whole other set of books.
Yeah.
Wolverine and a bunch of other
Moira X and all that
whatever
stuff.
Whatever X-Corp book that was sort
such
of
such a weird concept to bring back.
So we'll see what that is.
All right. But hit us up if you guys want to talk about your thoughts about New Mutants, X-Force, or anything else. Dawn of X, hashtag Comic Book Nation. We're going to close out this episode with letting Matt and Connor, and I forget if JK is into wrestling. Kind of.
That's cool.
Yeah. Oh, no. I forget. You guys are going to tell us about, for the first time, is this the first time we've done something non-WWE?
For the full segment,
yes.
Yeah, all right. So, AEW, it's your time to shine. Take it away, boys.
All right, quick introduction. If you only watch WWE, we're talking about All Elite Wrestling. It's the new competitive company.
It's Connor's
launched,
favorite.
It is not my favorite. I just find it interesting.
It's Connor's favorite.
It's basically, it's the new wrestling, the new hotness, the new wrestling promotion people are talking about. And they've had a few shows, been to a couple. They're coming here next week. Yeah, cheap plug. We're having actually Cody Rhodes and Brandi Rhodes. You can see in the image behind me, they're going to be sitting on this couch.
Booyah.
Next week, and we're going to be talking to them before Dynamite over in downtown Nashville. But before then, they've got a pay-per-view this Saturday night in Baltimore. Now, Matt, I ask you this question every time we do one of these. What's your match of the night pick? If you had to guess.
Here's the thing, and I feel like I could be more original, maybe, but it's so hard to pick against Cody and Jericho. That they've done an excellent job of building to that. I mean, Cody dropped, for those who watched that episode of Dynamite, Cody dropped a promo that was just fantastic. And this is not the first.
People are calling this the promo of the year and maybe his best ever, maybe up there with some of his dad's.
Yeah.
And that's unbelievably high praise.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, I mean, I think, and Jericho, just with all the shenanigans and stuff, I mean, to me, like, this last episode wasn't, like, the best one he's done, but he's done so many other ones in the past.
You didn't like the parody? If you watch them side by side, they're exactly the same, only just Jericho making fun of it. Like, he's listening about Bubbly instead of what he's supposed to be doing.
Like, I got the intent.
And,
I was just
And Soul Train Jones didn't do it for you?
No.
Virgil, come on. Come on.
It didn't do it for
Even JK knows who Virgil is.
I know who Virgil is. I was just saying, like,
Twitter icon.
Yes, Twitter icon and convention icon.
Yes, he is. Virgil, wrestling superstar.
But yeah, like, it's just, but before this, amazing stuff. Like, they've done some really fun stuff. So it's this match
for me. I love the match. I love the story they're telling. I'm worried that they're almost overcorrecting because they've added the stipulation in where if Cody loses, he can never compete for that championship again.
Yeah.
And he said it in the promo last night that it's a response to people looking at him and going, oh, you know, you're an executive vice president. You're in management here in the company. So you shouldn't be awarding yourself these opportunities. And I think that opinion only holds up if you never watch the show.
Yeah.
Because if you actually watch, he's easily your most over babyface and top three star. Like, every crowd loves the guy.
Yeah. And despite the nature of his character, like, characters like him typically aren't. They're typically despised as heels. They're the corporate whatever. And, you know, when he has his guys all come down in suits and whatever.
I hear people make the argument, oh, he doesn't need the championship. He's a big enough star on his own. Well, the counter argument to that is, I think the championship needs him.
Yeah.
Because the AEW World Championship, cool looking belt. Mm-hmm. Real nice looking, well detailed, all that stuff. Its history so far is it's been defended twice and lost on the side of a highway in Florida.
Yeah.
It needs some prestige.
Yeah. And
it
that can't, is disturbing how much it matches my own story.
And exactly, Kofi. It's the Kofi World Championship. It needs big names to hold it.
Yeah.
Like, within the first 3 years, I want Jericho, Pac, Moxley, Omega, and Cody to have all held it at least once.
Yeah.
And if you suddenly just say, oh, hey, our biggest star, our most liked character on each show, he's off the board now. I think that's a big mistake.
Yeah. I agree. The way you kind of phrased the question was, like, is it a mistake if Jericho, like, if he doesn't win the belt, if Cody doesn't win the belt? I don't think it's a mistake necessarily, but I think, one, that's the only part of the promo that I didn't actually buy was the part about, like, people say, I'm like, nobody really
says
that.
You hear that,
like,
a little bit, but it's just coming from the people that want to nitpick every, like, little detail about this company.
No one's saying that. Like, everyone, like, adores you. Like, that's not really a thing. So to me, I didn't really buy that. I thought they added this as an extra stipulation to just ramp up the tension or whatever. I think he needs to win it because of the stipulation. If there wasn't that, I would say leave it on Jericho for a little longer. It's fine.
Right.
But I agree with you. I feel like it does need someone who's going to be out there defending it. It needs to be built up a little bit because it is in its baby phase. So, yes, I agree. I think he should win that. Also, if there is a match that it would be also kind of like right up there, would be the triple tag.
Yeah, I think that one's going to go viral.
Sheer fun. Like, there's going to be so many ridiculous, crazy spots with those guys.
And every time Private Party's on the air now, everyone goes, what the hell are these guys going to
do?
Yeah,
they're
next?
Great. I mean, they saved that awful match.
Yeah, they kind of did. You know, you knock Dark Order, but give this company a little credit. They tried to push him and then immediately read the room and went, yeah, this isn't working at all. So pull it back.
Yeah,
I like that. So match of the night, we're both in agreement. Other big matches on the show, you want to keep out for Kenny Omega, John Moxley. They keep mentioning Mox's past with CZW and working at the ECW arena back in Philly. I think this is an indication that it's going to get violent. Like, we're going to get a lot of barbed wire.
I mean,
wire,
it feels like every week, though, they're already pulling out the
bat and the broom.
Yeah, the bat and the broom. And I'm like, okay, when are you going to hit?
Someone's getting hit with
one
of these things.
It's going to happen here. It's going to be a...
And it's not the Triple H where he kind of pushes into it. No, someone's swinging.
Now, here's the thing, though. And what AEW has not shied away from blood. They have not shied away from, which I like. I like that they'll take a couple, they'll go for it. However, there was one match, and I can't remember which pay-per-view it was, but it was the Dustin
might have been the Dustin Cody one, whichever one that like bloody, Dustin
yeah.
was just.
Oh, yeah, he looked like he was
it looked die. Awful, and I was like, okay, that's probably and, that's too far.
And we need they, to rein that in. They've made it pretty clear that it's only going to be on those pay per views where that kind of stuff happens.
But I mean, we're at a pay per view. So, I mean, okay, if it's going to happen, I just want you to see.
Chekhov's bat.
I just want you to see walk that
not Chekhov's
line.
Gun.
Chekhov's bat.
Chekhov's barbed wire
and,
cover.
And a barbed wire broom, because Kenny pulls out, because he's the cleaner, so he pulls out. He's like, I'm going to sweep you.
We've gotten, like, punctuations in their feud of, like, violent moments. Like, there was that whole time, I think it was the first Dynamite
yeah, the
episode,
table.
Where Moxley,
yeah,
like,
glass
power
table.
Slammed him through a glass table in the VIP area.
In a VIP area where you couldn't see the ring.
Okay. Yeah, exactly.
What benefit is this?
And like, there was also nothing on the table. It's like no one was actually taking advantage of this VIP.
It was well choreographed.
Yes, yes.
But we like to nitpick things in this wrestling world of ours.
Oh, I know. Yeah, exactly.
So the big question, we've been asking it on the website every week. We're 6 weeks into it. Matt, question for you. 6 weeks into NXT versus AEW, who's winning? AEW's winning the ratings. They're tied in our weekly column, which the new one drops today.
And we
the fan poll has been overwhelmingly on AEW's side, except for this week.
Yes.
NXT actually won.
I guess that's my thing. I think if I had to grade it up until this point, I would say AEW has won the fight or the war, whatever we're calling it, up to the last 2 weeks. I feel like in those last 2 weeks, because NXT started out extremely slow on USA Network, like really slow. And AEW just had all this momentum coming in. I feel that, though, a long game type of thing, you're starting to see AEW still do well in the ratings and everything like that, but you're starting to see it level off, and you're starting to see it kind of average out to where there's not that night, oh, it's the new thing every week.
Yeah.
It's just a really good show. So you're seeing that level off, and you're also starting to see NXT, some of those people see what NXT is doing. They flip back and forth a lot. I think NXT has had a way better show the last few weeks, including this week, because I know that was my vote. I think they've had a better show in and out than the last 2 weeks. It's been them, and I think the momentum is in their direction. So I will be interested in like six more weeks to kind of see if they can keep that up, if they can keep that trajectory going. Because if they can, then in another 6 weeks, I might say NXT is winning. But for now, AEW, just off those first 3 weeks alone, AEW wins.
I've got to go with Dynamite because every week feels like I need to be watching. The fact that the matches, the win-loss and stuff that they've emphasized that matters, the fact that they've been building up to this specific pay-per-view, very few segments feel like they're wasted. NXT can bring great moments, stuff with Finn Balor, stuff with Ciampa and the Undisputed Era. There are certain like moments where I'm like, oh crap, I wish I'd been watching this live instead of after the fact.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of times in just about every NXT episode where I'm like, this is a down period. And I could be skipping through this right now if this were on, if I had this DVR'd, I would just be skipping through this part. I'd be skipping through Conti versus Santana Garrett. I'd be skipping through all those Cameron Grimes matches. I don't get it, man.
I'm with you.
I skipped through most of Priest Dunne last night, even though I loved.
Oh, that was such a good match, though.
It felt like the 50-50 booking we knock Raw for all the time. You beat me this week, I beat you next week.
I mean, no, I get that. I'm just talking about it as a match, though, because I feel like we talked about FOMO on the show before. I never have that with Dynamite. I never feel like I'm missing out on anything. I feel like, oh, I'll watch the thing
even
after.
Even last night with the Cody thing.
Like, no, I don't ever feel that way. Even when I go back and watch after. And I just don't have that thing. Now, the moments I feel like Dynamite excels in is its promos. Jericho, Rhodes have both delivered
Moxley
several times. Moxley too.
In one promo better than anything he did in WWE.
Oh no, hands down. I just also haven't been captivated by him so far. I will say Omega has impressed me. That's not out of me. But I don't have that. I don't feel like I'm ever like, I gotta go see it. But I'm always entertained. AEW puts on a great show. I'm just saying I don't have that yet. And sometimes with NXT, I feel that. I feel like I need to watch because they're going to pull something out of their hat. And both shows have solid wrestling. So it's not really about that. It's just, I'm missing that.
Fair enough.
All right. Thank you, Connor. As always, Connor's on top of this wrestling stuff. So we will be keeping you guys informed because you guys have written in and people do love a lot of these wrestling segments. So As this world expands like the Marvel Universe, we will keep you on track with what the hell's going on with your NXTs, your WWEs, your FTWs, your WTFs, and everything else. All right, that'll do it for this episode of Comic Book Nation. If you are just getting into the show these days, we post new episodes every Wednesday and every Friday on comicbook.com. Make sure if you are one of our weekend listeners, you also go back and check out the Wednesday show. It's the middle of the news week. Things happen fast. This past week, we got surprises left and right as Batman casting was dropped on us in the middle of a show. And we also have Janelle Wheeler on Wednesdays, which is always great. So be sure to check those out when you listen in on the weekend. If you want to talk to us about anything we talk about on the show, you can always hit us up with the hashtag Comic Book Nation, or you can subscribe to the show on various listening platforms that include iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, Google Podcasts, Google Playlists. You can tell an Amazon Alexa device, fire up Comic Book Nation podcast, and it will do so, or you can check us out on the YouTube. Now, if you want to talk to us individually, you can reach me at Kofi Outlaw.
Catch me at MagularCB.
At ConnorCasey_CB.
I'm at WoeIsJoe.
Woe is Joe, but is Joe woe? I always want to know that. All
right, that's some Dr. Seuss stuff right there.
No, that's some.
You
that's
were
some,
spitting bars that's earlier.
In the streets of Brentwood, freestyling for you.
Straight out of Brentwood.
Straight out of Brentwood. All right. Thank you guys for listening in. As always, we love talking to you here at Comic Book Nation, and hope to see you guys for our next episode. Have a good weekend, and we'll see you back. Peace.
Peace.